Fallo, Zama. Oh, Corpus Christi est. Receive the body of our Lord, Cast.
Any a shot? Who wants a drink? Me boys! Forget the flesh of Christ! Let's drink!
For Christ's sake, silly bitch, I heave up this out of here. Kneel!
Come on, you bloody bastards! This stuff will curl the hair of Christ!
Eat it, you damn sinners! Without it, you won't go to the soldiers' paradise where wine and whores abound!
Mass is over, Cardinal!
There we are,
leave some for me, Summer.
Prepare to attack, my boys!
If these two perverts die without Holy Communion, they'll burn in hell forevermore, Captain!
What's more important to you? Your immortal souls or your empty purses? It's high time to launch the attack, because that was my city! They threw me out! Give it back to me, and you can ransack the houses of the rich for 24 hours! I'm giving you a free hand!
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I do not have the plague. I just don't.
And what about you, Trish? Trish Coughlin?
As far as I know, I'm fine.
Good.
Little bit of a drippy tummy, but I'm good.
Oh, wait. Do I feel a boil?
What, do you want me to lance it for you?
Let's wait and see.
Let's see how you feel by the end of the podcast.
Yes.
We'll make our decision then.
Well, you know, I live in a weird complex of townhouses, so we could maybe weaponize that.
Yeah.
Yeah, very well could.
To give me time to get out of here.
Then you have this complex to yourself. That would be weird.
Oh, it would be so much better.
Yes. It would be quiet.
It would be quiet.
Oh, but then you have to like rig stuff up where people, and then all the kids would be like, that complex is haunted.
No, it's just a podcaster.
Like I said, haunted.
Oh, dear God. All right, today we're going to be talking about another Rutger Hauer movie this week to round out our celebration of the life and the films of Rutger Hauer.
Because yeah, our hearts are that broken.
Yes, it is. He was definitely one of our favorites. And, I mean, we'll talk about more Rutger Hauer films down the road, I'm sure. But we wanted to spend a couple of weeks remembering, even if you don't agree of what we're going to do with this remake, it is one of those things that, like, when we remake something, it's not always that we want to see that remake. It's the case of we want to make you aware that the movie exists.
And this would be one of them. This is one of those sort of underrated, unknown, kind of misleading movies.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first time I watched it, and this time again, I because it's been a while since I've seen it, I was kind of expecting a sort of swords and warrior kind of movie, and it's got some of that, but it's not that kind of movie.
I'd kind of forgotten about it. I do remember it being violent. I was a kid, and this came out in the high fantasy era where there were a lot of that stuff going on, but it's not romanticized. It is medieval Europe and how awful it was to be.
You got the plague.
Yes.
Going around.
The plague is a character in this movie.
Yeah, people didn't die of old age in the Middle Ages.
No.
This was not something to be romanticized. Ultimately, it might be what caused the failure of this film, being that Paul Verhoeven was a Dutch director who was, this was his first film for international audiences in English. With its failure, he actually, this was actually his also last Dutch movie filmed in the Netherlands before moving to the States, so he could actually learn what American audiences actually wanted. And it'd be a couple years later he would do RoboCop.
Yeah, it has a very European feel to it, where it's not a pretty looking, like,
no. Well, I love it. Looks dirty. What I loved about it is how gritty this movie is.
And he even had trouble getting financing for his films, even in Holland, because of some of the nature of his films. So even his own people were like, eh.
Yeah. Like, this film, I don't know. I'm still rolling it around in my noggin. Because there's bits of it I enjoyed, but there's other bits where, like, it's quite long. That was the only other thing, too. Some of it I'm like,
I didn't like it.
I could have cut out a bunch of it.
Yeah, when I first saw it as a kid, I didn't like it for obvious reasons. I mean,
it goes slower.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a slow-paced movie. Things I couldn't wrap my head around. And let's face it, it wasn't for me. this was a movie I should have never seen as a child.
No.
The amount of nudity, yeah. Like the amount of naked Jennifer Jason Leigh. Yeah, you shouldn't have seen this as a kid.
No.
And the funny thing about this movie, and because that's a kind of a very much a Verhoeven kind of thing, is nudity of both genders. There's one guy and there's got fucking massive balls.
Yeah.
Mine must have been the slightly cut version.
Yeah, because
I don't remember.
He was in the background, but I mean, they were massive. They looked like donkey balls.
It's the part when they were burning their clothes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they, like, shocking.
And I kept looking at that, too. I was glad to see that. Because, well, okay, what I meant is I was glad to see that because it made sense, because he's like, we have to burn all our clothes.
Balls!
We have to burn all our clothes because of the plague. But I'm like, okay, this guy's actually taking that order to task, and there's a few other people who still have stuff on. I'm like, going, no, there's the plague. Get those balls out. Yeah, you're gonna survive. Like,
Rutger Hauer, get rid of the slingshot.
Right? Yeah. I don't want to see him in a thong anyway. It looked weird.
It didn't look very weird. It was kind of disturbing. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of nudity in it, and a lot of it fit the movie and the time. There's some that felt a little gratuitous. Some of Jennifer Jason Leigh's nudity did feel gratuitous. Mm-hmm. The scene with the nun in the bed, totally gratuitous. But a lot of the other nudity was, it fit, right?
For what he was trying to do far as not romanticizing it, which ultimately I think is probably why it failed with American audiences, is that it was not the fantasy film they were looking for. No. Fantasy romance adventure film. And ultimately it wasn't the film that Paul Verhoeven wanted to deliver either, because he didn't have that romance in there at all. In his initial scripts.
And ultimately, I think the main failure for American audiences is because there is no clear hero in this movie. In that sword.
I loved that.
In the sword. Yeah, but I'm saying with the American audiences, with that whole sword fantasy movie, they want a clear-cut, deep, clean hero.
You don't have anybody to hang your hat on. Like, there's every time you think you like somebody, and then they do something like,
reprehensible. Yeah,
there's nobody that is a clear-cut winner in this film. Like, ultimately, the way Jennifer Jason Leigh's character kind of plays the two against each other,
she's the villain.
Yeah, well, I mean, when they finally got there and had her in the same room, I'm like, kill the bitch.
Oh, see, I didn't look at that
way.
She was a survivor. Given the circumstances,
for sure.
She knew how to survive. Yeah. So I don't think she was villainous in any respect for the fact when she was like, I just know how to get through this.
They try to establish her as an unlikable person.
Like at the beginning, she was a brat. Yes, I didn't like her then.
Right. And manipulative, and I thought that the way that she was directed, you kind of had mixed feelings about her, because you could tell she was being manipulative and you understood why, but she always had this look on her face like, I'm enjoying this too.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Well, she's on an adventure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was it. Sort of
after the raping.
Oh, God, that's a problem.
But it's also a key part of the story.
It is, but there's problems I have with, like, just the way that that's couched is sort of just a huge problem. But, I mean, if you didn't have that in there, I could see how her character would be like, okay, so I'm not being put into this marriage that I've never even really met the guy, and I'm going on an adventure. I could totally get on board with that, type of character, and I could see that. But I can also see, here's what I was also kind of couching, how she's looking at both of these men. Rutger Hauer, she's, let's see, 90% of the love is downstairs, 10% upstairs. For Stephen, it's 90% upstairs, maybe 10% downstairs. Because I have to tell you, when I was watching this movie, I'm like going, like, when you don't like Rutger Hauer, when other stuff is happening, I'm like going, putting the rape aside, I can be like, yeah, I can get it. Because, like, yeah, my little Trish has made some shitty decisions, and I don't trust her to do any of them. Like, she should never be in charge.
Well, I mean, I did like how Rutger Hauer, you know, he was trying to be the leader of his men mm-hmm. once the commander had separated from them. And he would give them what they want, but not give them what they want.
He'd find a way to distract them from doing the horrible thing they were about to do.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. At first, and then later on,
he just takes her and is like, no, she's mine now.
Later on, he also, I think, gets this... It isn't until the end where he finally kind of realized, I'm just a dude now. Like, I think he got really huge head for a while, was like a little out of control. Because mm-hmm. he's like, well, I am invincible. Considering all the stuff's been happening, I should be invincible. And it isn't, I don't think, until the end he's like going, yeah, I wasn't that invincible, but I'm still pretty good. Like, he gets that comeuppance that brings him down to where he should be. Yeah. He's still better than most of his other men, but he's where he needs to be.
Yeah, the old adage of power corrupts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's kind of what was happening with him.
Yeah, he got more and more arrogant as, I mean, there's that scene where he comes out wearing white instead of red.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Where he starts to feel superior to these people who have been with him for so long, all because of this woman. And I mean, ultimately, that's really what the story is about, the relationships between Martin, Agnes, and Stephen.
In this iteration, yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. where the original script was really about his relationship with Hawkwood. And that betrayal.
And it seems like there was hints of that.
And it's still there in the script, but it's been pushed way back yes. in favor of this romance.
Yeah, and there needs to be a balance there because it starts off with that betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of gets, you're right, it gets pushed to the side. And I think that at the end there, Hawkwood's reluctant, he's not even reluctant to go forward with his assault on them, knowing full well that he's already betrayed them once and that ultimately, he's the reason that they're doing the things they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, he's just honestly wants to get back to that nun he whacked in the head.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which, that's one of the things that I would cut right the fuck out, because it makes no sense at all in the context of the film.
Yeah. Well, it takes him out of the battle and normalizes him. It puts him basically in retirement.
Yeah, but you could do that without having to have this extraneous character.
Yeah, ultimately, you do see that earlier before he makes that mistake.
Yeah.
In the film, he is... He almost,
Danny Glover line, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
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 Well, ultimately, I think maybe it should be that the nun actually dies. Like, I mean, he has to have the guilt to get to that place, but I don't think...
And well, I think that's why they left her alive, is it's leverage to get him back.
Mm-hmm.
To help them take out this band of bandits.
Yeah, I think that's also what she
wanted revenge on this kingdom that they helped liberate.
Yeah, and I mean, you could
return to their king.
They could maybe handle it a little bit better then, because she felt completely extraneous. Because she, as soon as he walks away, you never see her again. Right, mm-hmm. as soon as he goes back to.
Yeah, and I think it's because she's a nun, which I kind of got the point with. Like he was worried about his soul in an essence. Mm-hmm. I think you need to establish him as much more devout at the beginning.
Yeah, even this band of mercenaries has their own cardinal.
Yes,
to bless them before they go into battle.
Insane.
Oh yeah, he's a complete nutter.
He's got nothing to do with anything religious. No. The guy's insane.
Well, like most of that whole crew is insane.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they've been through lots of battles together, and that's going to weigh on you, I guess, a little bit. This was a very strange cast as well, because mm-hmm. there's Americans in here, and Spanish-speaking...
Italians, French,
Dutch, of course.
Dutch, of course, yes.
And they all got along like a happy little family. No, not so much.
I'm going to guess that's a no.
Yeah, they were like literally elbowing each other out of scenes. Because it was so crowded.
Oh, man.
It's survival of the fittest. And uncharacteristically of Paul Verhoeven, he did not storyboard this film as tightly as he would normally. And he kind of let it a little more freeform. But this movie needed a lot more planning.
Yes.
And so there was a lot of tension on this set between this multicultural cast and Verhoeven and Rutger Hauer, mm-hmm. who had worked together several times, where Rutger Hauer was trying to get away from that villainous role mm-hmm. that I think he'd been priorly typecast and wanted to be more heroic roles, which this really was not.
No. It was almost there. It was almost there, but yeah. not quite. I mean, this is probably one of the, I mean, aside from Blade Runner, I would say this is probably one of the most charismatic performances I've ever seen Hauer do. He's very charismatic
in this. And so you want him to be better. Yeah. There's an anime and a manga called Berserk. You can watch the OVAs on Netflix right now, at least in Canada. I don't know elsewhere. But the creator of that very much based that anime and was inspired by Flesh and Blood.
Nice.
And his main character, Guts, was Rutger Hauer's Martin, except without the giant sword.
Well, he did have a giant sword at the beginning, yeah? Yeah.
Oh, you haven't seen Guts. That one needs like a truck.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
That's one thing I love about anime, like these ungodly swords that no human being could actually lift, let alone swing.
Yeah.
That's why it's anime and it's not live action.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Howard's performance in this, or Howard's performance, I should say.
I did too.
Jennifer Jason Leigh, I mean, you could tell she's early in her career. She hadn't quite found herself yet, that she was kind of a little all over the place with this one.
And she defends this movie greatly, though. Because
she should.
It was censored when it was brought over the States, and she takes very much, has an anti-censorship stance, and that's been very public, so...
Yeah, like this is a more complex movie. Like you say, there's people, like, you can't hang your hat on anybody, but that's the whole thing. Nobody's...
And I think a representation of how it would have been there is there's no true good guy or bad guy in this situation.
Yeah,
and you're just looking to survive. Yeah, so.
And I mean, since the release of this in 85, it does have a cult following and the reviews have gotten quite kind for it. I was actually surprised at how high they actually were. IMDb was a 6.7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes was 81% critic score with a 63% audience score. Now, even now, as it stands, like I think it is a pretty decent movie, but it's not a crowd-pleasing movie, and it's never going to be the way it sits.
No, because it's very much an artist's film.
Yeah.
It's a storytelling film. Like, it's not it's not about action. It's not about anything, but... relationships in the end, right? And even in the original script, it was about a relationship.
Yeah.
They just changed the dynamic of it a little bit, or quite a bit, actually. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, in the end, that pigeonholed romantic triangle, if you will, was actually pretty fun.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, with Steven being the inventor and learning science and things, and his ingenuity was quite something. Although, that wooden tank at the end... probably would have needed more than one night. Like that thing was insanity.
Yeah.
But it was so cool though. But I loved that juxtaposition between the two suitors.
Oh yeah.
But you could see the similarities as well. Or Stephen is they're very dedicated to whatever they're doing.
Well, Agnes even says to
Martin.
Martin, she even says, Stephen is you, but younger.
And you're him, but older.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's a point there, when you talk about the wooden tank, where Hauer or Martin uses Steven's own invention against him.
Yes.
From the beginning of the movie. I thought that was great because it shows that Martin is more than just this.
Martin showed respect for it, for that ingenuity. Yeah. And
he liked Steven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he likes his own men too, because I mean, when the one guy volunteered for the gold coin and ultimately blowed himself up.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else blew him up because they lit the fuse too early.
Well, I kept looking at it going, you lit the fuse way, way too early. Are you lighting it when people are just running with it? Mm-hmm. That's just a dumb thing.
I always thought it was going to happen again to Rutger Hauer at the end of the movie because it's that looked a little early.
These people don't know what to do with fuses. That was the only irritating part.
Yeah, it's timing, right? But again, that's what happens with new inventions is you have to practice and to get it right.
Yeah.
Blow up a number of people until it's good.
Well, I got some good timing here. So let's blow up your ears with the Flesh and Blood 1985 trailer.
What?
What's more important to you, your immortal souls or your empty purses? They threw me out. Give it back to me and you can ransack the houses of the rich for 24 hours.
You missed the loop. Come on.
Stay right here with Father George.
Why?
Fighting is for fools.
Messy Mark, your award's in heaven.
I'd rather get paid sooner, sir, if you don't mind.
My promise to your soldiers was a mistake. I want them out of my city, Hawkwood.
Get to the side!
Throw down your arms and all your loot.
It's a saint.
Saint Martin.
Martin is my patron saint.
I see the hand of God! And I see Soldier Martin!
The bastards who cheated us will pay. We'll wind up on the end of this sword.
Who are they?
Just some monks.
Thank you, little Scar.
Agnes! If St. Mark points that way, we go that way.
That was Flesh and Blood 1985 with the story by Gerard Soderman, who also wrote the screenplay, along with Paul Verhoeven, who was the director. And of course, we have talked about Paul Verhoeven before. Mm-hmm. Episode 84.
That was Total Recall.
And mm-hmm. Episode 132.
You already mentioned RoboCop.
I did indeed. The movie, of course, stars Rutger Hauer, who we've talked about a couple times before. Episode 39.
Blind Fairy?
No. Oh, Lady you guys Hawk. Got it right last week.
Oh, no, Lady Hawk. I have it right. I just had
Oh, Lady Hawk. Hawk. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I get those mixed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were pretty close together.
Episode 56 was?
Blind Fury.
Okay, sorry. I
and of course, last week.
And yeah, and of course, last week we talked about The Hitcher. Jennifer Jason Leigh also was in that mm-hmm. episode. Yeah.
And I'm sure that had to do something with the way that, the fact they worked so closely together on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I don't think they actually have any screen time together in The Hitcher.
I don't believe they
no.
did.
No.
I don't think
Unless
they actually
Unless you did. Count him in the truck at the time, but those probably were two separate scenes. So.
That's right. They were never on screen at the same time, right?
Yeah, never on screen, because in that universe, they would have been in the same area. Like the finger in the fries, that he'd be around when she's around. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you don't think you ever see them on this. Oh, no, he crawls into bed with her.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
yes.
So they are, yes. Also stars Tom Berlinson as Stephen, who was in The Man from Snowy River. Jack Thompson, who played Hawkwood, was in Leatherheads. And I've mentioned the Man-Thing movie, Marvel movie, before he's in that.
That's funny. In my recast, I actually have cast somebody who was in that, believe it or not.
Nice. Oh, right on.
Yeah, I didn't mean to. It just happened that way.
Fernando Hillbeck was Arnolfini. King,
yeah.
Arnolfini, and Stephen was his son. Susan Tyrell was Celine. We have talked about her before,
have.
Sam and I. Trish wasn't here for this one.
Which one?
Episode 172.
Fire and Ice.
She's got a great voice. And anybody who listened to that episode, she played Juliana, the sorceress in that animated film.
Yeah. It's funny because I was like watching this and like going, I recognize her. Where have I seen her before? And I was going through her IMDb. Yeah. I'm like, oh, shit, she was Ramona Ricketts in Crybaby.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I totally, the voice hit me before anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I totally know that voice.
Yes.
And she was wonderful in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Lacey was the Cardinal. You can catch him in Raiders of the Lost Ark and Red Sonja.
Yeah.
Brian James, who's somebody you'd recognize if you watch a lot of 80s stuff. He's passed mm-hmm. away now. He was Carstens.
Yeah.
Carstens. Okay. He was in Blade Runner and The Fifth Element and Tango and Cash.
Yeah, like I saw his face and I'm like, I've seen this guy in so many movies. Mm-hmm. He's one of those character actors you look at, that guy from that thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say, yeah, Blade Runner is probably the one that most people would recognize mm-hmm. him from.
Yeah.
I did not know he had passed until I was looking at his IMDb. I'm like, no wonder I haven't seen him in anything in a long time.
Yeah, that would do
that
it.
Would, yeah.
That like, would do it.
Yeah. I had not realized he'd passed. That one slid under my radar.
Yeah. He died pretty young, I think around 56.
54.
54.
Yeah, that's so young. We're close to that, guys.
John Dennis Johnson. Thanks for cheering me up. John Dennis Johnson was Summer. He was in Wyatt Earp and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing the name because it's French. I'm just going to say Simon Andrew. Mm-hmm. He was in the opposite of the best Bond movie, Die Another Day.
Wow. But that clarifies where his face is familiar.
Yes. Of course, Bruno Kirby was Orbeck, probably the one guy that stood out like a sore fucking thumb in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
We have actually talked about him before in episode 183.
We're No Angels.
We're No Angels. Yeah. Which still was... I don't like the remake, but I adore that original film.
Yeah, it was so good.
Also
so
starring good. Kitty Corbius was Anna. Marina Sora was Polly. She was in Hamlet and Crystal Heart. Most of her stuff is in mm-hmm. foreign language films. And if you caught it, Nancy Cartwright, Bart Simpson, was also in this movie.
Was she the tongueless chick?
I don't know. She played Kathleen, so I don't know who Kathleen was. Yeah. But she was in there.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't go that deep into the IMDb.
No.
Usually I'll stop, but I like still look. And if there's a name I recognize, then I'll mention it. Because it's weird that Bart Simpson was in this movie.
Yes, it is weird. Very weird. Yeah.
But see, I think it's really weird. As soon as I saw the credits, I'm like, Bruno Kirby?
Was Kathleen the handmaiden?
She might have been.
Oh, dirty Bart Simpson.
Very yeah. dirty Bart Simpson.
Well, you know. It's before Bart became Bart.
Okay, well, this movie had a budget of $6.5 million. Anybody want to guess how much it grossed in the U.S.?
U.S.?
1.2.
Wrong.
3?
Wrong. $100,000. On a $6.5 million budget.
That is about as a bomb can get.
The fact yeah. that he was allowed to make another movie after a bomb like that is...
That's impressive.
Impressive, yeah.
Him and the director of photography.
It was supposed to get a wide release. It didn't. It got a limited release, and that's why it happened. So, but well, him and the DOP worked together lots, as well as the musician from this film.
Yeah.
So there's still lots of people he worked with. And there's nothing wrong with the way this movie shot.
No,
the way this movie looks is great.
I've seen there's some lovely shots, like with the burning noose, mm-hmm. and it's around the priest. I love mm-hmm. that bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's. I don't think the failure of this movie is the fault of the director or the writer. I think this was a marketing problem.
Well, marketing, I mean, and expectations of what an audience yeah. in America would want.
Especially in the mid-80s.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, if you don't have anybody to grab onto. Mm-hmm. And that even now, when I see what they're doing, I'm like, I get it. I don't like it. You know, you kind of mm-hmm. need somebody you can hang your hat on yeah. a bit and follow. And that should have been Rucker Hauer.
It should have been,
like,
yes.
Like, even if they're not squeaky clean, you need somebody you can at least attach to. So you yeah. can't have them do something so terrible in a movie that you mm-hmm. like you lose it.
Yeah, and everybody does something terrible in this yeah. movie.
And it was like, but yeah, culturally it was not going to do well anyway.
No. Certainly not in North America. No,
it doesn't sound like it did well in Europe either. So mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate. I think it was one of those movies that was ahead of its time, and to be honest with you,
I don't think that time has come yet.
Yeah.
I still don't think it would work.
No, this is one of those movies that would be the sort of one of those underground art house types of
things. Yeah, it's something film buffs will like.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be financially successful that way.
It's good to study. I feel it's decent. I wouldn't say it's like it's amazing, but it's definitely a film to study about making a film.
Yeah. Mm. There's some clumsy dialogue, especially at the beginning of the movie. But on the whole, it really is a sort of almost like a masterclass in filmmaking.
Well, especially knowing the problems that are on that set yeah. now, he wrangled a lot of problems and still made it work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, because it's well shot. The only performance in it that is all clumsy is Bruno Kirby, like you said. Like everybody else is really good.
He did no business being in this movie. Yeah.
Well, I think they were trying, like when he did the whole puppet show, I think they kind of set him up as like the fool and the entertainer, but they never really dug into that.
Yeah, like he should have been somewhat the soft heart in this this gang of mercenaries.
Well, and that would make sense too, because I mean maybe I'm reading too much into what was happening there, but there's a relationship between
him and Neil.
Yeah. I mean, and I love the fact that they suggested that there's a homosexual relationship in this group.
Oh yeah, I think that they're lovers.
Yeah, there's no question. Doubt. I didn't think I was reading anything into it, especially at the end when Neil kills himself.
Yes,
because Orbeck's dead.
Yeah, well, and Orbeck's like go on because he realized he had the plague and didn't want to give it to his friend Neil.
Yeah, like I mean, yeah, this is that they had a love story.
Yeah,
like if all the love stories in this movie.
That's
throw
the most genuine of them, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I'd like throw all of the other ones out. That's a love story.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about some of the romances here. Okay. You've got Celine, who's pregnant at the beginning of this movie with possibly Martin's son or possibly Summers or possibly
Costanz.
She's leaning towards Martin and Martin's accepting it.
Why not?
Yeah, and it does come off fairly funny.
It does come across fairly funny. And there are some great moments of humor in here.
Yeah, until the poor baby's stillborn. That was pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, that was terrible.
But necessary. Right? Yeah. It was because it certainly was one of the things that would happen in this time. Mm-hmm. And it would have really caused some problems with the rest of the story if they were hauling around a newborn.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What? But it
Lone Wolf and Cub.
But it's sort of, it would have been very hard, I think. It couldn't be there because Celine is desperately trying to hold on to Martin. Having that infant around would have changed a lot of dynamics.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to mention. Yeah, is
he would have had to have been the father rather than the leader.
Yeah,
But not just that; it would have been Agnes. Wouldn't have even.
But it wouldn't have been a factor at that point.
No.
Yeah. Well, she might have been, but not.
Agnes was Jennifer Jason Leigh. So, and meanwhile, we've got an arranged marriage between Stephen. The son of the king and another kingdom, which is Agnes' kingdom. And I guess the dowry's pretty large.
Yeah.
So we've got that one going on. And when there's the kidnappings later, the revenge for at the beginning of this movie, what happens is the mercenaries are hired by the king to take back his kingdom. These people have taken, we don't even know who the invaders were, but he's like, they kicked me out of my own home, so I want it back. And then he promises these men free reign for 24 hours to take what they want from the rich
which
citizens.
Was my first twig that I'm like, this guy's a fucker and he'll fuck them over.
He did.
And that's of all the people, he's probably actually
he's the absolute villain.
He is the absolute villain in this movie.
Within hours,
without a doubt.
Yeah, within hours, Arnold Finney, he commands Hawkwood to get these men out of here.
Bribes Hawkwood.
Yeah, bribes Hawkwood with money and an estate.
Yeah, and I mean, that's an underlying theme of the whole movie is greed.
Yeah.
Right. Is how it motivates it, the entire story ultimately.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's where the mercenaries are here.
Yeah.
So yeah, like the underlying film is also, the theme is also greed, but also the other theme about the hypocrisy of religion is also in there a lot.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But that big barrel that they roll out, I was loving that bit because I'm like, well, I desperately wanted to actually be full of something.
Yeah, well, and it was a way to force them into this, this all in this one area so they can say, yeah, party's over, get the fuck out and leave all your weapons and your loot behind.
Exactly. Like he robbed them.
And I mean, this is Hawkwood initially had problems with this because these men trusted him and this has completely broken that trust,
and he's already dealing with the guilt of the nun.
And it's sort of like, but yeah, the whole thing too is like, I think he probably wouldn't have had that much of a problem with his, like, I can get them out, but they should be able to keep what they worked for, like the jewels and stuff. And I think he wouldn't have had a problem if that had been the case. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like this guy just totally fucks him over. Like, he's like, fight for me, but then I'll fuck you over.
Yeah. You get a sense at the beginning of this movie, that's what these mercenaries do. They've fought lots of campaigns together.
Oh, they just do it for money.
Yeah. They're a wild, crazy family.
Yeah, because Martin even says, I've fought in 14 campaigns or 11 campaigns or something like that.
Yeah, so, and Polly's got a kid in this band.
Yeah.
That was disturbing, actually. I mean,
hauling around a kid,
Well, not just that. I mean, that was actually not that uncommon to have, like, a drummer boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that they exposed him to, that in the movie, he was exposed to some very graphic situations was uncomfortable. I mean, I think it was supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a lot of this movie was supposed to make you feel uncomfortable, and it was successful in that.
Yep, it does make you uncomfortable watching. Yeah, the whole movie is not an easy watch.
Yeah, no.
And I genuinely think this is the Verhoeven's best use of a lot of this stuff to make you uncomfortable. Because he's done other movies subsequently, like especially in the 90s, mm-hmm. that where he was trying to accomplish the same thing. But because it was Hollywood, it became sexualized instead of making you uncomfortable. Basic Instinct is a good example of that.
But there's also, it's weird in this movie, like I say, the rape scene I still have a problem with, but it's weird. I think in Hollywood we'd be fine with that. Mm-hmm. I think it's the other sex scenes that they'd have a problem with, which is just real fucked up. But what, again, like the Hollywood thing is like the sexualized violence is what probably would be okay. And that's messed up.
Yeah, he's never been shy about showing sex and violence on film.
No. It's one of his trademarks.
Yeah. But like, I mean sexualized violence, sex as violent act.
Yeah. Yeah, this one might be the only one I can think of that's like that. I mean, Total Recall is easily his most mainstream one and is probably his least graphic one.
For sure, yeah. Yes.
But the violence, I'm pretty sure he was fighting for, and they wanted more sex. Like, I can see how they would, that would be totally messed up. Like, he probably would have wanted some sort of sex scene. No, but we have to blow people's heads off.
No, yeah, he fought for the gore and the sex, and it did get pulled back and cut, snipped here and there, mm-hmm. just to tone it down a bit for American audiences.
Yeah, and I could see how it would, because you want to talk about repression.
yeah, like the whole, I have to tell you, the bathtub scene, I'm like going, I want to be in that tub. I'm like, it looks kind of like a nice big tub.
Yeah, I want to talk about the hot tub that was always hot.
Right?
In medieval times.
Well, don't forget, there were still servants in that house.
Yeah, and I think you could kind of stoke, if you put like, if it was well insulated and high up enough, if you put coals under it, you could get heat out of it, but without burning it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you could.
I'm sure there was a way.
Well, don't forget that the servant came in and said, your bath is ready.
Yes, and then there was the fight scene at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah, no, that's...
Days later, when nobody asked for a hot tub to be hot.
That's a good point,
See, and that would... I would have bought that had the fire already been started in the room at that point.
Yes.
Yes.
Because then you'd have a hot tub.
Yes, as well as everything else. Yeah.
But that was an amazing tub. I was like going, I love that tub. I want to be in it.
It was a pretty cool tub. I have to agree. I felt the same way. I'm like, yeah... Initially, that hot tub scene was supposed to be him and Hawkwood, but probably wouldn't have ended with sex.
No. It would have been a Game of Thrones Brienne of Tarth and Jaime Lannister type of deal.
Yeah.
I don't get that right.
Two warriors in the hot tub together, just having a chat.
Yeah, that's what it would have been. Yes. Yeah, one day I'll watch. One day.
Yeah. But yeah, no, definitely different than what you'd have with Hawkwood, for sure.
Oh, for sure. There's no question.
Yeah.
And I'd like to bring more of that Hawkwood and Martin relationship into whatever we come up with, because I think it was important, and mm-hmm. I it did bug me all through the movie. Is like, well, Hawkwood is their leader and mentor,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then he abandons them, and they kind of just he just disappears for a while until he's asked to go and catch them again, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. And find Agnes.
Yeah, and I think that story of the broken trust between him and his men is an important one.
It absolutely is an
idea, and his struggles with that, his guilt.
Yeah, for sure. Especially after his recovery from the plague. It's like, well, I survived this when I should be dead.
Yeah, which was genius, too. By the way, does the plague come on that fast?
No, I was going to mention that.
That was my question as well.
I mean, I don't know much about the bubonic plague, but it usually takes a few days just for a cold to gestate.
That's what I was about to say. You don't even get a cold that fast. You don't even get food poisoning that fast.
Yeah, you're right. I mean... I think I've gotten food poisoning within about 48 hours.
Yep.
Yeah. And these guys were like, wow, tainted meat. I have a sore on my chest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, at least. And Celine
dies within like, what, half an hour?
2 minutes. She's just drank the water and then starts throwing up, essentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. She does take a long time to die, though, because Summer and Karstens wait.
Yeah. Despite the fact other people have drank from the same pitcher with the slab of meat in it. Mm-hmm. Which was a genius idea from Hawkwood when, you know, he survived. Oh, a lot of his camp is dead from that siege, and he sees the dead dog who drank from the tainted blood. And
he kills the dog. The dog is dying.
The dog was dying, yeah. But
they made that dog look bad.
Yeah. And they butcher the dog and then just catapulted it into the camp. Exactly. Into the castle.
And that is very much the type of strategy you would expect to see in this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is well, you know what? If they're not coming out, we're going to make them come out.
Yeah. Which ironically, you know, Stephen's being held captured in there, and he's the one who actually teaches the doctor how to treat the bubonic plague. Don't do the bloodletting. Do
lance the boils.
Which he does do at the end. He's like, science marches forward. Oh, sure, now, fucker, when you're proven wrong.
Because Hawkwood has proved him wrong, because Hawkwood did it for himself because everybody else is dead.
Yeah.
Be like, yeah, sure. You really believe that, you dick.
I actually got a chuckle out of that at the end of the movie.
But that looked painful when he was doing his own sores. Yeah. And I'm like going, that's some commitment.
Yep.
Yeah, even he's like, do it. Mm-hmm. Let's the boils.
Yeah, no, I liked the way they handled all of that. Like, there's so much in here that was handled so well.
Mm-hmm. But the balance here is weird because you have some of these entertaining, funny moments in this dark, dark movie.
Yeah.
And it doesn't balance the way it should.
No, because the darkness really does overpower. And then you have that confusion of who your hero is. Mm.
Right? It does feel like at times these characters think they're in a different movie than they're actually in.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's especially the siege when they take over the castle and they go up and then like they're running around trying to bring down the drawbridge. Mm. To me, I thought like, and with Agnes and Martin, I'm like, the way they're acting, I'm like going, oh, so like I'm watching a pirate movie, but on land, is essentially what I'm seeing. Like, it's very swashbuckly in that very moment.
It is. And I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Oh, because, I did like it, but it's a different tone from a lot of the movie.
Yes. Yeah, it did feel like, you're right, like a swashbuckling
adventure
film. And
I feel like this at times is Paul Verhoeven is giving in to certain demands from either the studio or Rucker Hauer and an expectation of what this medium is supposed to be or has been at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, in order to make this film work better, is audiences do need more moments of action to break up the moments of drama.
Yeah, ultimately, I think the darkness of this movie needs to lighten up a bit for mass appeal. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it makes it a better movie, but it might make it a more entertaining one.
Yeah. Well,
that's a good way to put it.
It's straddling too much. I figure you either got to make it, you got to lighten it up quite a bit, or like just go full bore into the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
If you're full bore into the darkness, it could be very artistic, but it could be a very hard watch.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, if I were to change ending this movie, I would change the ending. I would have, because in the end, Agnes has spent more time with Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's developed a relationship with him. I could easily see her choosing Martin over Stephen because of that.
Yeah, I mean...
Because she's selfish. She's a selfish, selfish character. She's a survivor, but she is absolutely selfish. It's all about what's going to benefit her somehow. Mm-hmm.
And Martin won't let her be with anybody else. I mean, he tries to strangle her at the end of the movie.
Well, but what I thought, like, when you say, like, it would be Martin, but I'm kind of coming at it from a different angle, whereas Stephen is just some kind of staid, like, I think the invention sort of turned her head a bit, but he's the more staid, kind of stable thing. She's just going to be a wife and breed. Yeah, she's going to be wife and breed kids, but I think she's going to make a poor decision and want adventure.
Mm. Yeah, and that's the same thing. Is she's enjoying now that this
she's
adventure.
Now that she's had it.
Yeah, like, does she want to be just a maiden again? No. Yeah.
I mean, I almost want to just cut her out entirely and go back to Paul Verhoeven's original intent and make Hawkwood the focus of this.
Well, see, but I do like that, but I, like
I did
it.
Like Stephen, and I did like it's. He brought this cartoony adventure aspect into it with all of his crazy inventions.
Oh, yeah, and I cast to bring some of that humor into it. So. Yeah.
See, and definitely,
and he was
like
a natural leader because of it. And that's something I liked about the character. Mm-hmm. You know, he learned to be the king. Like, he was the king's son, but he had no interest in being what his dad was.
Oh, he doesn't like his dad. Actually.
And once Hawkwood is taken out of the picture, that's why they go to Hawkwood in the first place. He doesn't think he can lead. Mm-hmm. And his father is just been brutalized.
Yeah.
So he's no longer can lead this campaign.
I love the way they're holding him up in the horse with the contraption there. I love that.
Yeah, so he's just not functional. So once the two actual leaders of the men are out of the picture, he's forced to come up with a plan, and he uses his own scientific mind to come up with something. Ultimately, it doesn't wind up working, but gets him caught. But it was ingenious at the same time.
Ultimately, I think here's the deal. I can think Agnes can be like the instigator to finding them, but what I kind of want is sort of the subliminal romance to be like Hawkwood and Martin fighting for Steven's affections. They're both fond of this young man and want to be his mentor. I could see that at the beginning where they're between each other, and that's why this whole thing's really
weird. Even see Martin in his respect for Steven. I'd like to see a little bit more of that.
I would like to see more of that. And I was actually hoping for that at the end scene where he was chained to the dog collar.
Mm. Yeah.
And then he rescues Martin from the well. And Martin should have said something. He's like, you know what? I'm not happy about what has happened here, but it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like you. It's unfortunate your father is an asshole and betrayed us because you got caught up in that betrayal.
Well, when he runs past him and he says, you have to trust me, I would have liked something more.
I think something got lost there.
Yeah.
Because I had a feeling the whole point is Martin's running by like going, if I unhook him, his father will think he's with us because I know what that dick thinks like.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's chained up, he'll be safe from his own father.
There is that.
And I think that, there could have been more there. I think that
instead, he had to free himself with lightning.
Which was fucking hilarious.
It was stupid.
It was stupid, but fucking hilarious. I
mean, at the end of the day, he should have just flicked him the key. Yeah. But yeah. I get what you're saying. It does make sense. Like, if you're free,
Your father might get the wrong idea.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a subtext that would be challenging at the best of times, but unless there's dialogue to support it.
And, like, his father is very cruel, so I could see him thinking that.
Yeah, I could totally see him thinking that, because he's one-minded, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. I think we can make that work, because I would like to see that relationship, those relationships at the beginning of the movie between these three men, you're right, I think need to be the core of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I still see the Agnes and Steven and Martin triangle working, but I think that
Do you want them to have a meet-cute under a gallows?
No.
Like in this movie?
Yeah. Well, when I watch them and she's like, she's digging it up, this plant underneath these dead men, I'm like going,
they're
you're
going to
eat that?
That have been, because they're looking for mandrake root and this superstition of if they eat the mandrake root together, they will fall in love.
They will always be in love.
Yeah. And he's like adamantly against superstition. He's a man of logic.
Yeah.
And I think that should play at the end of the movie.
Right? They do wind up playing that really well within the film with the burning noose, his superstition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And St. Martin.
Oh, my God. And that cardinal. Yeah. Gosh. And the cardinal fortune-telling some bullshit. Like,
yeah, he kind of turned these band of mercenaries into this weird little cult.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, especially when he murdered that guy who wasn't along with his rhetoric.
He was unfaithful. I'm like going, Cardinal, your book that you really like is really down on fortune telling. Yeah, FYI. And
here's Martin who's like, oh, that dude's crazy, but St. Martin, my name's Martin.
Yeah.
I'm a Martin.
Yeah. and
that's where it begins. He's like, hey, I can be the leader of these dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I liked about this movie was the fact that Martin is a really great manipulator.
Right? Yeah.
He's able to manipulate the situation to his benefit, no matter what, just to reach his goal.
Yeah.
Right. And then you have that same characteristic in Agnes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why, like I said at the end of the movie, I kind of see them together.
They're kind of House of Cards type of couple.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think in the end, one of them's going to kill the other, but way down the road. But
it almost happened.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, I could see Steven's logic saying, well, you know what? She doesn't really love me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think Verhoeven actually made the right choice. Like, ultimately, for Martin to move on, he has to be alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think also Verhoeven made the choice that would have been made by somebody in that time frame. Like, she's not going to go running after Martin, who's been sitting in a plague well. She's going to go with Steven, now, who is ultimately the better option for a woman in that time.
I have a solution for both of you.
Cool.
Because I think Martin ultimately, at the end of this movie, leaves. I think she chooses Martin, and he says no.
I think that's more likely.
Very nice.
Yeah. Because he's like, yeah, no, I will kill you.
Yeah. I could see him's like, we are bad for each other. This is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of this happened because of the way I reacted to you.
Oh, yeah.
And, his whole family's dead basically because of his decisions.
Yes.
And so he doesn't want that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. He could say, like, he's like, my weakness for you is my weakness.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't be a soldier and have you.
Yeah. He is.
But Stephen needs somebody like you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, Steven.
Yeah, and you like Steven.
Yeah,
and that would wrap up that with that respect there, yes, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, make it more of a decision for all of them. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. If she makes a decision, then he makes one on her behalf.
Yeah,
but then she also when he convinces her, he's like, he will be with, like, he'll take care of you, but in a way, you probably need to be taken care of. Like, you're a little messed up, so maybe. Except someone who's probably good for you.
I mean, ultimately, does this movie need the nudity? No. Does it need to be as gross as it is? No.
Strangely enough, with the nudity of Jennifer Jason Leigh, like, some of the stuff they're getting into a tub, I get it.
I mean, yeah, there's
a lot of stuff that isn't too, like.
But I don't need a full frontal to know you need to get naked to go into a bath.
No, you don't.
Yeah, a bare bottom is enough, right?
But the thing is, I kind of liked where she just did that power pose at the top of the tub, being like just presenting herself to him fully for the first time.
I'm yours. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's not that I'm opposed to a full frontal. I mean, she.
Yeah, but that's what I think she was the point of that bit.
Yeah.
But is it absolutely necessary? No.
You could do the same shot from the reverse.
True.
It actually would probably be a little bit sexier from the reverse, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Your imagination does some pretty wonderful things in situations like that.
Right?
I know, but I'm like, when we're talking about some of the nudity, it's kind of funny. That one, it's weird. There's so many times I've seen, like, just exploitative nudity. In that one moment, I thought, I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I've always felt that that's a bit of Verhoeven's weakness as a director is he has to show you everything. And I'm like, no, you don't. Yeah. Like,
but what he
RoboCop didn't need all of that gross violence either. No. I mean, it's a fine film, but you didn't need it, and you don't need it here either.
But what I want is when they're burning plague clothes, everybody's damn naked. That's what I need, because I need that to be because they got to get rid of their plague clothes, and it bothers me.
And you can have Bruno Kirby going, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have big horse balls, dude. And you don't see it, but I mean, he should be the Joker type of character.
Exactly. I mean, you don't even have to show the nudity, but you can certainly make sure that it's clear that they are getting all the way naked and burning all their clothes.
I don't know.
Bruno Kirby comes up with a wheelbarrow for them.
Just to equalize some stuff, I'm ready for some full frontal male nudity.
Yeah,
let's
I really struggled with how to kind of approach this movie, because honestly, a lot of it really works.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like if we remake it, we're going to make it worse, but maybe make it more appealing.
Well,
and I do like let's make more of Hawkwood's story happen.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. Like, because there's so many times he's on the screen and accomplishing nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and I'm thinking about it, how much screen time did they have at the very beginning of the movie, him and Martin? I don't remember it being a significant amount at all.
Not really, no.
They didn't do a very good job of establishing that relationship in this version of the movie.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's an important thing to mention. I think that you can do away with the blessing scene.
Yes.
Yeah,
to have a strategy scene between Martin and Hawkwood.
Yeah, we should actually see maybe that in the background a bit. And yes, we should see Hawkwood among his men and being part of his men. You never feel like he's a part of and has their respect, even though he says the line. I'm like, I don't feel that way.
They trust me.
So, yeah, you should see this camaraderie, especially with Martin.
Yes.
Because he should know. It's that
heartbreak that leads him to vengeance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of get the feeling that he knows that he needs Martin to help keep these guys in line. Like, he knows
because they're fucking savages.
Yeah.
Right.
He and Martin have to be together. Otherwise, they lose control of this whole group.
Yeah.
Because they are all savages. I mean, Martin's walking the line.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, but Hawkwood's clearly a man of control. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Martin is that
gateway
between the savage and control.
Martin kind of leads these men through just acquiescing in a lot of cases, and subtle as he gains a little more trust with them, then he's able mm-hmm. to push them a little harder and make demands. And sometimes he has to get physical with them.
Yes.
Hawkwood doesn't have to do that. They respect him in a much different way. The men see, at least at the beginning, Martin as an equal, as one of them. And Hawkwood is their superior officer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but yeah, like when you talk with Martin, he'll get physical with the savages, like that one scene with Summer where he's like, mm-hmm. I'm just going to take you down. Like I think the rest of the group sort of knows if I cross Martin, I'm going to be in for probably a hard fight.
Yeah.
Well, when Martin realizes he's got the Cardinal on his side, who's willing to kill a heretic, because the Cardinal thinks Martin is the resurrection of Saint Martin.
I know.
The statue that every time it goes willy-nilly, like, hey, let's go that direction.
Which right. I think is a great device. I really yes. thought that was a
I
great
I thought it
device.
Was great because it just kind of shows, like, Martin has been put in this mm. awkward position to lead the men, but he doesn't know where to lead them.
No.
Outside of wanting to get revenge for being shafted by this king, mm-hmm. which they do ultimately by getting that, what do you call the caravan, and when they're all dressed as monks.
Yeah. And they kidnap Agnes by accident.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they don't actually do it on purpose. Yeah. They would have left her behind or killed her with everybody else.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that all of this happens because of a circumstance of accident.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, in our movie, mm-hmm. I see that scene, like I said, it doesn't have to be as violent. Like, I can see Martin maybe curbing their desire to kill them. Like, at the end of the day, like, that caravan's full of her dowry. They just want their money back.
Yeah, and you know what? I can even see the kidnapping being deliberate. We're going to hold her until you pay us the money you owe us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that
makes
that
a
never
device.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that it never happened, I was like, I thought they were going to.
Yeah. And then you can eliminate the rape scene, and you could have her falling in love with Martin for a different reason.
That's
yeah.
And I like that.
And he's got to protect her because ultimately she is leverage.
Yes.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, she mentions it too. If you don't harm me, you'll get money. And at one point, I think I would like Martin to be like, if somebody, do you know how much money we're going to lose if you touch her? I will kill the first man who does that because yeah. I'm not being put out that money.
Yeah, you could even have that first attempt at rape, right? Mm-hmm. I bring that uncomfortableness into it for a few moments mm-hmm. and have him stop them.
Yeah.
Right? It makes more sense.
And go from a logical standpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes more sense, and it really underlines the greed portion
yeah.
of the subtext of the story.
Ultimately, what we are undermining Verhoeven's intent of that gritty medieval, this is not a romanticized place,
yeah.
but like I said at the beginning of this, I'm like, we're making a different movie here mm-hmm. that ultimately we kind of want to make money. That is yeah. kind of, at the end of the day, this is a business, and to spend $6.5 million on a movie nobody's going to go see.
Yeah.
At the end of it too, I think what we're doing, and it's clear, like, there's some bits of it where there was parts in the original vision that need to be brought back because they're somewhat, for some reason, they thought to remove them made it more compelling, but instead, I think, wrecked it. Like you say, the Hawkwood-Martin relationship mm-hmm. gets really shunted aside, and I think that makes a very compelling story. I want some of that to be put back
and
in.
The kidnapping mm-hmm. brings that back in because Hawkwood then acts as the negotiator, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, I like that.
You can That's have good. Your discussions with him, right? Mm-hmm. You can have him come into the castle under a flag of truce. Mm-hmm. You can have your scene with them in the tubs talking, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And Martin talking about how much he respected Hawkwood, and that betrayal was what's motivating everything that's happening mm-hmm. now.
Ooh, and you could also add sort of like the tension between him and his men. They're like, we have Hawkwood now, we want to kill him. And he's like, no, he's here to negotiate, and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. And we will return him in the condition he came in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's still a mutual respect, and ultimately Hawkwood's tired. He tried to retire from the fight,
yeah.
and he's still respects these men and doesn't want to see them harmed. I mean, the king, he even had two of them killed when they were taken out, and mm-hmm. they could have been the ones at the gallows, but probably not.
Yeah,
he ordered the death of two of them as a message to the rest
yeah.
of them.
And they were supposed to be. Crazy. And they were. And I mean, this band that Martin has wasn't the entire army either. They were scattered.
No. Yeah,
so.
I honestly was kind of puzzled how he enforced it, but I guess King still had his own men.
He still had his own men, yeah. right? But they would hire mercenaries as fodder. They do the bulk of the fighting. They die for money, mm-hmm. and then you still have your army.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's kind of what happened there. And then they use the army to bring this mercenary band that's already weakened because they've done all the fighting and they've mm-hmm. lost men. And I mean, you could really emphasize that too, is that they are already weakened and they're drunk and they're high on their victory.
Yeah.
Right? And they actually do a really good job of that with the barrel. Booze, party, yay, right? Not realizing that it's a betrayal.
Yeah, I wasn't so crazy when they took that other kingdom away, that castle away from the people who were living there. But I was a little... It still doesn't sit well with me, the fact that there was a kid already dying of the plague in there.
Yes. Like, and they didn't have any...
They didn't know. They just, you know, the nursemaid wound up grabbing the kid and trying to commit suicide rather than be taken. And the kid lived long enough to infect the other camp when they found her.
And that's the only reason that character exists, right?
Yeah.
But, and I don't know. I mean, you don't necessarily need that because they'd already established the plague was occurring in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the dog could be the carrier quite as easily, right? So instead of having the dog catch the plague as...
Instead of having this gross scene where these people are jumping from the top of the tower.
Yeah, and I thought they would have already come in contact with the plague once there's that funeral procession. That's where I thought something like that would happen.
Yeah.
There were plenty of opportunities to do that.
To do that without that. I mean, I understand why it doesn't sit well with you, but it also does speak kind of the character. I mean, they are still...
Well, I mean, Agnes tries to stop it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was just a knee-jerk reaction. It's like, well, we'd rather die than be caught.
Yeah.
And I don't think Martin and their men would have killed them.
No. And I think that it would be an interesting...
In fact, they might have left if they know the kid had the plague.
Yeah. It would be an interesting experiment if, like, Agnes tried to sneak, like, found the child and tried to sneak it back in to, like, take care of it, only to bring the plague in.
Yeah, but that
would totally not make the rest of it make sense.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think Hawkwood's strategy of...
We do have to fix that bit where the kid was already there, though. I don't know how we do that.
Well, not that the kid was already there, but the kid had the plague.
Oh, just there's the plague.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
That means there's already the plague present in that castle.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's where your thing that's the objection is, not so much what happens at the castle, just the fact that there's somebody with the plague already in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like those bed sheets would have had plague.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, we can have the plague infect Hawkwood's camp through different means. Like you said, there's plenty of opportunities there as they're traveling.
Yeah, they travel through a town. They travel through a procession that is already with the plague. Remember, where they're holding their clothes over their mouths. Yeah. When Stephen's still with them, and like, that won't do anything.
Yeah. I love that aspect of that character. I love it. Want to keep it where Stephen's like, guys, come on. You got nothing. Like, he's totally shooting down their superstitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it could be something as simple as when they go to bury this plague body, they bury it upriver. They get water downriver, right? Just something that simple, right? Because that's how it's carried. Like, they establish that it can be carried through the water, right? So you just have to sort of visually show how it happens without contriving a scene where that undermines the rest of the movie.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
You said it earlier with the dog.
Yeah. I mean, that is the easiest way.
The dog from the village follows them over and is already infected.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's probably the easiest
way
to do it.
If it's there longer, then it takes... We don't have that ridiculousness of it happening overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's taking a little longer. We should see that time.
When the dog's in camp, it looks fine.
Yeah. And that helps do away with the scene where Hawkwood essentially murders the animal. I mean, he's putting it out of its misery, but in the end, he finds it gone. It's dead, right? And then he uses it for his own devices.
Yeah, because things have happened while he was away, and their initial siege with the big wooden tank and stuff has failed. A lot of the men have died.
He still thinks Stephen is dead.
Yeah, so mission's failed. It's like, fine, let's give them what they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that could be your turning point for Hawkwood, where he goes from trying to come to a peaceful resolution with these men that he had known and loved, to this rather horrible decision that he makes.
Mm-hmm.
That switch was really fast.
Yeah, because he's trying to negotiate something peaceful, and when he thinks it's all failed, then, you know, and he's come to like Stephen just as much as anybody else has.
Yeah.
He should be very likable. Mm-hmm. And that's enough where he's like, this all needs to end.
Because he does think that Stephen's dead at this point.
He does.
Yes.
Yeah, and it could also, because he's tried to negotiate before, but then got like sidelined by the plague while all the rest of this is going on. And then when he kind of is ready to return to being in full force, he finds out that they've done this to like everybody else. So he's like, I guess I just can't negotiate anymore.
Yeah. Because at this point, Steven and Hawkwood's squad mm-hmm. or troops, mm-hmm. they're decimated.
Yeah. Well, they're decimated. He figures he has failed in his mission. He hasn't been able to reach Martin or mm-hmm. reestablish a friendship. That friendship was broken at the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he's got nothing left, and he can't save them anymore. Like, yeah. The king's going to come down full force if he doesn't do something else. Yeah. So he's just like, let's mm-hmm. wipe this off the map. The king can't touch them.
Yeah.
It has to end in fire. It was either plague or fire.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it ended in both.
It ended in both. And
I do like this. That's one thing I really liked about the movie is the panic that goes through the Martin's men when the plague hits. Mm-hmm. When they realize what's happened.
And you don't even have to show any of them having the plague or getting the plague like they did. Mm-hmm. Right? Not waiting for Celine to die. And they don't need any of that stuff because the sheer panic that you might have it. It's just like the AIDS panic in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not the fact that you have it. It's the thought that you might have it.
Well, and that's mm-hmm. initially runs through them when the meat is catapulted in.
Yeah.
And if maybe there's a better showing of the passage of time, because mm-hmm. Martin, he's made it his home now. He didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
No. They're noblemen now. I like the scene where they're like, this is how we eat now.
Yes.
Yeah. And knives and forks, people.
Yeah, you can see how that would be tough if you hadn't done it before. But those forks look tough. I don't know how I deal with those.
But yeah, I mean, they've gotten everything they've ever wanted.
Yeah.
They don't want to go back to being on the road and being mercenaries again.
Mm-hmm. No, not if they can avoid it. Yeah. You're right. When the plague to meat first comes over, there's that panic. And then Stephen offers them a solution, right? Mm-hmm. He says, well, actually, no, Martin does. Right. I mean, Martin initially says, well, burn mm-hmm. your clothes and
burn
the meat and we're good to go. So he brings order back. And mm-hmm. then when they find the meat in the jug, that's when and everybody's consumed from that except for.
And that's mm-hmm. because one's left behind and it's Stephen who tosses it into the well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That tiny little bit that was left over.
And that's the thing with if Anna told Martin that she saw that. Mm-hmm. So now we have a problem.
Well, she's conflicted.
I mean, once it's in the well, it's in the well. Like,
true. And I mean, but I think it's, the whole thing, too, is she likes Martin. She doesn't really give a flying fuck about anybody else there.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't like any of them.
She doesn't like any of them. So having them drink that water doesn't bother her so much. Yeah. But when Martin mm-hmm. tries to, that does bother her. So that's why she knocks
She could find a way. She's We've established that she's really
They couldn't stay there regardless. Their water mm-hmm. source is fucked.
Yes. But they didn't. They don't know that until after the fact.
So, mm-hmm. you know, she wanted them dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She certainly did. Because she wanted Martin mm-hmm. to herself.
Yeah.
And if she said anything to Martin, these people don't die.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing. She knows if she told Martin, he'd warn them. She doesn't want them warned.
No. No, you have that moment there where she knocks the cup out of his hand. Maybe you contrive it so that she sees the meat coming out of one of the jugs and then she sees... So it doesn't look like she's betraying Stephen. It doesn't look like she's betraying Martin or anybody else. She just happens to see... It's one of those things where they're pouring the water and the chunk of meat comes out, mm-hmm. right? She doesn't have to betray anybody.
Meanwhile, where's the water for the hot tub coming from?
Do they have a bath after that?
I'm just saying, the water's all coming from the same place.
To be fair, Martin was sitting in that well for quite a while.
That's true. Yeah. He was well fermenting in there.
He's all good. Because when he comes out of the well and she sees him again, she starts kissing him. I'm like, ooh, you gonna die.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah. I thought so too.
You were going to die.
Like, you poured tainted water on him and then you got him out of the well because he's all mad mm-hmm. and thought, oh, you get all kissy with him, but you might as well lick that dog's butt.
Yeah. No, and I would change that because you have this opportunity there for that. I don't want to call it reconciliation between Stephen and Martin, but that understanding between Stephen and Martin
where they get
locked up together.
Maybe that would be a better thing rather than the well.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if they did it in the well and he gets out and she gets, he's like, oh, you're alive. Well, can't kiss you, so.
Yeah.
Satan!
Yeah.
Demon!
Yeah. because the plague doesn't, like any virus, not everybody gets it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
She could be crazy too, or the cardinal, like, he has risen. Oh my God, demon, come back from the dead. And then the cardinal's insane enough to believe that.
Oh yeah, just play against that guy's crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Martin, he should be dead. We saw him. He was dead.
But, I mean, Sam's thing would work, too. But mm-hmm. I like the idea of using the cardinal.
Yeah, that undermines the decisions that they make at the end of the movie. They make at the end of the movie, though, right? If she tries to get him killed, mm-hmm. right, then that undermines her decision later, too.
But you're right with it helps, but it makes me think, like, he has more survivability if he doesn't go in the well. I just don't want him to have contact with the water.
Yeah. Mm. It just, in the end, it ultimately doesn't make sense for him to go in that well because he's plague infected.
Yeah.
I think that it gives you that opportunity to have that dynamic between Martin and Steven a little stronger because that conversation, I mean, it starts with the conversation between them and with him in the well and Steven not being able to reach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's lots of cleverness there because...
And Steven is an amazing shot.
Yeah, like Orbeck drops that because they're going to try to leave Orbeck mm-hmm. and Emil, and he drops that heavy cross, which he ultimately uses to huck into the
bucket
whale.
First try.
The bucket on the well, which on the first try, we only really had one.
I know,
but... makes it fall, so he has a rope to climb up. Martin can climb out of the well.
Yeah, and that's we've talked so much about suspension of disbelief. That's one of the moments where it's really hard to suspend it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was hard.
Yeah, so, I mean, if they're just locked up together and...
And we could have that moment where it's sort of, you could have them in like adjoining cells and like Martin gets free, but it could be that thing too where he's like going, you got to trust me, but that's the whole thing where he won't let him go because he's like, your father will think you'll run of us if I let you go. Mm-hmm. So that moment can be there too.
Yeah. I think that works out a lot better in terms of solving some of the major concerns I had with those final scenes.
Yeah, once we got to the last 20 minutes, I'm like going, oh, okay, they're turning on him. What's happening now?
Yeah, and I like the idea of them turning on him because you see that starting to happen already.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this is just like the pinnacle moment where it's like, no, you've led us in a really poor direction. We're done with you. We're leaving. This is the time when they could leave because there's only Hawkwood and the doctor still left alive.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're not going to meet any resistance.
Yeah, so they can flee.
Yeah, they can.
And they're still very upset about the plague thing. We got it. We'll go. We'll find out what happens. I could die. I don't know.
I love how, like, Polly is...
joins the army
yeah. right after. Like, the ones that are still surviving. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I'm done with those guys. I'll join you guys. Yeah. It's either that or the hangman noose. So.
It's survival in that time frame. Like, everything Agnes is doing, again, survival. Everything Polly's doing, survival. Yeah.
Well, and that was...
Celine, I feel, wouldn't have gone down that route. She would have been killed because she has that thing where
she's stubborn.
She is very stubborn and she's not... She doesn't care if she survives.
And she's a little bit mad.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's what makes her so endearing. Yeah. I can't wait to see how you guys have cast her. And I think it's that time, really.
Yes.
Don't you?
I think probably yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll kick this one off. Because it's a big cast. I don't know how you guys did it. This is one of those I had only intended to do our kind of primaries because it's such a big cast. And then
you go down the rabbit hole with this.
Yeah,
one
because, well, then you're looking people up and you like, oh, that guy would be good for this role. Yeah. I cast most of it.
I might have gone a little bit old on one of them. But
that's all right. We'll discuss it along the way. Okay, well, initially I had to come up with the director. And I wanted somebody who kind of dealt with this kind of fantasy subject from, okay, think monster, but what really wasn't? How about Brotherhood of the Wolf, right?
Oh.
It was nice. It had a grounded but mythical feel where there's a lot of superstition that winds up being something else. And so I went with the director of that movie, Christoph Gann.
That's a good decision.
That is a good call.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. I think he would... ultimately, he might just make the same movie, but...
Yeah, but I mean, he can... Yeah, the visuals of it, like, I'd like to really enrich some of that.
Yeah.
He would make it... He definitely did bring that entertainment aspect that you were looking for.
Yeah, that up the action-adventure aspects of this movie, which really work when they happen.
Yeah.
All right, so for my Martin, I went with Theo James, who was in the Divergent series, and he's does a lot of voice work too. He's on the Netflix Castlevania right now.
Oh, nice.
So, and he had kind of the right look I was looking for. For my Agnes, I went with Margaret Clooney, who is you can see her in the Victoria series. And
any relation?
She was Harriet in Victoria.
Any George Clooney relation?
No, spelled differently.
Okay.
For Hawkwood, I went with Sean Harris, who has been in the villain in a couple of Mission Impossibles.
Cool.
But I thought, oh, let's try to make him a little likable. Mm-hmm. And he kind of had the look I was going for, especially the last time we saw him in the Mission Impossible when he had the full beard and stuff. I'm like, oh, I see it.
Nice.
For Steven, I went with Nicholas Holt from Mad Max Fury Road.
That's funny. He was on my list and I decided not to.
He was the Beast in X-Men. He starred as J.R.R. Tolkien in Tolkien. So he's definitely a rising star. He'd be good as that second lead in this movie. Mm-hmm. And if you hadn't noticed, there's a lot of Brits in my... Because anybody who's ever listened to this show, every time we do a fantasy recasting, I always have to go with Brits because otherwise it doesn't seem authentic.
Well, and Nicholas Holt, wasn't he in the remake of Clash of the Titans?
That I don't remember.
I think so.
He might have been.
So he's already done the sword thing.
There you go. For my Arnold Feeney, the King, I just wanted to throw back to last week, so it was Sean Bean.
Nice.
I have a similar throwback with the same actor.
I considered Sean Bean for many of these roles. I didn't do it, though.
Excellent. Daniel Mays, who was in Star Wars Rogue One and The Adventures of Tintin, I made him our cardinal. For my Celine, this was a tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was so good. This Susan Tyrell was so good as Celine.
So good.
And I'm like, who's got enough crazy? You're going to like this.
Nice.
Catherine Tate.
Yes. I would like her to do the entire role as Nan.
Done. Christopher Hivju. He's been in Game of Thrones and The Fate and the Furious and Lilyhammer. I want him as Karth Sans.
Nice.
For my Orbeck. You'll also like this. I do see him as a bit of a comedy act. I went with Jack Whitehall.
Oh, yes. Oh,
that's a good call. I like that.
For Summer, I went with Duncan LaCroix from Outlander and Vikings.
Nice.
For Polly, I went with Carice Van Houten, also from Game of Thrones, and Repo Men. And for Meal, I went with EastEnders and Severance star Danny Dyer.
Nice.
And that is my cast.
It's so funny. I just imagine Danny Dyer or someone's like, all right, you guys are going to get off our nut here in this castle.
I just thinking Danny Dyer and Jack Whitehall, right?
Oh, my God.
And anybody who doesn't know Jack Whitehall, he was in Good Omens as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. He's stand-up. He's been on a couple of the Big Fat Quizzes of the Year.
He's known more for his stand-up. And I think there's a couple stand-up specials on Netflix right now. Yeah.
He's also filled in for Graham Norton on The Graham Norton Show.
Oh, those were good fill-ins, too.
They were great fill-ins.
Because, Graham likes to take the piss out of him.
He's so silly.
So it was a bit of vengeance there.
Absolutely. He's so silly. I love it.
All right, Sam, how about you?
Okay, I will start with my Martin. You know what? Like I said, it feels like a bit of a cop-out, but it works for me. I went with Daniel Craig for my Martin.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Very simple. He has the right look, has the right charisma.
Almost 60.
Yeah, but I mean,
I can't believe that James Bond's almost 60.
I know.
Yeah, he doesn't look it, but...
No.
Well, with my Martin, I was struggling because it was like... Rutger Hauer was 41 when he did this, or 40. And just trying to find somebody around 40 that's right was a little hard.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, and it does make my Martin a little bit older, but he doesn't look as old as he is. So for my Agnes, I went with Mia Goth.
Nice.
What's she from?
Suspiria is probably the most recent one.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah. For my Steven, I went with Tom Holland.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Right?
I wanted that innocence that Tom Holland can bring to stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The little bit of irreverence and humor as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I thought, yeah, he works for me.
Yeah.
I like your Stevens better. Both of your Stevens better than mine.
For my Hawkwood, that's who I went put in Sean Bean's role, or put Sean Bean in there.
Okay, right? Yeah. Similar ideas. I almost did as well.
Yeah. For my Celine, I went with Sally Hawkins.
Yes, she's good.
That's good.
Just because she's got such an interesting face, and Susan Tyrell has had such an interesting face as well. I thought that would be, and I think that she could do the slightly crazy.
Yeah. I feel like Celine's like our star. Like, Celine, that's the most important person we're casting.
Well, because she was.
Her physicality that Sally Hawkins can do is really good.
Yes. For my summer, I went with Conan Stevens.
I know who he is.
Yeah, he's massive. He's massive, huge. Massive, he's played Man Thing. He was also in Game of Thrones. He was the mountain in the first.
I've used him a couple of times in our recasting as well. Yeah. I've thought about doing like a giant guy in there because I felt like we were missing that.
Yeah,
but I also felt that kind of undermines our Martin a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went the opposite direction. I'm like, when you have that scene, that conflict scene between Summer and Martin, where they're pinning Summer down, that it just shows
how
strength.
Tough Martin is.
Really is. Yes, this guy's bigger than him, but Martin is more skilled.
Right.
Yeah, that's the way I envision it in my head.
Yeah, I kind of dig that. And Summer was bigger than Martin in the movie. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for my Miel, I went with... Oh, I can't even spell... Can I read his name?
Some awkward name.
He's an actor from Vikings. Wow, I can't even read my own writing. I think it's Garo Skarsgård. He plays a very interesting character on Vikings, again, slightly mad. Mm-hmm. But I think that he would... But he also has this really great, tender relationship with his wife. And I thought he could bring that tenderness to his relationship with Orbeck.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
Right. That's what I started thinking when I saw him. And he's got a really neat, unique look. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was going through for all these characters, is I wanted them to be distinguishable. For my Orbeck, I went with Harry McIntyre. He plays Ethelrod in The Last Kingdom. Again, slightly comic relief. He's a drunk and a bumbler in that series. And I thought, yeah, he could bring that to this role. Nice. And he'd fit really... I think he's got a certain... feel about him that would work really well with sort of bringing that homosexual relationship sort of more apparent. I mean, it was pretty apparent, but but address the relationship part of it more. For my car stands, I went with Ewan Bremner.
I put him in another role, but Ewan Bremner did come across my listing.
Yeah, he was in the Trainspotting movies.
He's a Spud.
Yes, he's filled out and he looks much better than he did in the first Trainspotting movie.
Watch the new Trainspotting movie. Yeah, he looks
quite healthy and fit. I think that he actually has a look similar to Brian James.
Yes.
So I'm like, yeah, I could go with that. Right? Mm. And again, he's got that ability to deliver a little bit of humor. For my Cardinal, I almost forgot to cast him. I went with Timothy Spall.
Oh.
We have a crossover.
There we go. And then for my director and for my king, whose name I can never pronounce, I went with the same guy because he's really good at directing these sort of period pieces and these big ensemble casts, but still being able to focus on the smaller part of the cast. Mel Gibson. I'm thinking about Braveheart and how he had that balance of humor and action and drama all kind of really well handled. Right? And I know that he's kind of still a little bit persona non grata, but I think that he'd... And then, of course, having him in a smaller role in the film would also be a good way to sort of bring him in.
Okay.
All right, so I'm up. Okay, so again, we know the crossover. Timothy Spall is the Cardinal.
There you go.
Who's like, because he can do crazy so good and in a way I really like. And then I did Agnes first because I had an actress in mind at the beginning, Alexa Davies. She's a British. She was in Raised by Wolves and in a new comedy like Dead Pixels. She's about the right age, but she also looks very young. And I think she could pull off that.
Cool.
Stephen, I'm sort of struggling with. I'm not happy with my Stephen casting, but I went with Jamie Bell.
Okay.
Because he's about the right age. Yeah. And he's sort of. I need somebody of sort of a smaller stature. Well, that'll
attract American audiences for sure.
Mm-hmm. And then Martin, again, so hard to cast. I was trying to find the right guy with the right sort of charisma. But then I thought, like, I'll just go with Gerard Butler because he's older. He's like the big, rough guy. Give him a sword. Everything is good.
That's not bad. I was actually considering him as well. But for some reason, Daniel Craig just wouldn't get in my head, so I went with him.
True. And I think Gerard Butler might be a little older than I want the actor to be to do it.
Yeah, but he'd certainly have the gravitas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For Arnold Feeney, I put Tim Roth because he plays an incredible bastard.
I like that.
Yes, I do,
Nobody else does it better.
Actually, you know what? I like that so, so much because he's so little. He's such a little man.
Yeah.
So it just adds to the nastiness of this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got that's
small man complex.
He's got that that King Farquaad complex.
Well, wasn't it which one is the Liam Neeson one? He was also the
always
evil
on a horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. He played like some foppish nobleman who was just an ass in that one. Yeah. So I was like, I just want to bring that back. I love that role. He's just and he sneers so well. I love it.
You need to see Tin Star if you haven't yet.
It's on my listing. And then okay, for cars there's Tom Hardy. I just went a different way with it. I could just find him being just boisterous.
For sure.
Celine, I went a different way. And I went with this actress because she looks kind of a lot like the original actress, but I also think she can do crazy. Natalie Dormer.
Oh, I like that.
They look very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
For Hawkwood, I put Brendan Gleeson.
I was trying to find a place for him, but I just wasn't working for me.
He's a little older, but I like the hangdog look.
Yeah,
and I can see that working really well in that particular role. As Brendan Gleeson is one of our, I mean, I love Brendan Gleeson, but it's so easy to just put him in everything.
Mm. Yes,
because I like him that much. Yes. So that's why I stayed away from him.
I know, and I don't think I've put him in a lot. So I was like, I'll do that.
Okay.
For Orbeck, I put Simon Pegg.
So Miel's Nick Frost?
No. Miel is Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Oh, okay.
Because he can do comedy as well. So the two of them together would be wonderful. And I think they'd really make a cute couple.
We had a lot of potential crossover here because a lot of these names were on like my sort of, well, that would work. And then I dug a little deeper to stay away from all the go-tos that I always go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, these ones came because I didn't know what I was doing with this movie. Like, it was really percolating. I was struggling with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to find it through the actors. Summer, I put Mark Strong.
Okay.
Not a particularly big guy, but freaking intimidating for some reason.
Yeah, you've kind of got some names that I was resisting and using because I use them a lot. So
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was exactly my thinking as well. So I went a different route to find my actors this time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's appreciated. Yeah. And then for my Polly, I put Emily Watson.
Excellent.
Emily Watson was another one that was like on my AB list. Yeah.
Both of you guys have strong casts. I think Trish has got the star power.
I've got the star power.
Yeah, and
I like your guys because you were thinking beyond.
Yeah, well, and that's always the challenge I have when we do, especially these big, large ensemble casts, mm-hmm. is how star power do you want to go before you start having that conflict that you already had in the first time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, and I was thinking like careers that could be built
absolutely.
In a lot of cases. Yeah. And in a lot of cases, I don't even know half the actors I used. I'm like, he's got the right look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I have a passing familiarity with all of these actors, so enough to know that I'm comfortable casting them, right?
Yeah, well, for the most part, I had an idea of what they were capable of and whatnot, but not as familiar as I'd like to be.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, yeah, we need like a mixture of both our casts because for mine, if we're looking at making money,
yeah,
we're going to do well here.
Yeah, we got to pay for the last one yet.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Well, and that's why I went with some pretty big names for my sort of key characters. I mean, Mia Goth is not a big name yet. I think she will be, though.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah. But certainly Daniel Craig and Tom Holland in your lead roles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to draw absolutely. Audiences for sure.
Cool. Well, I'm pretty happy with what we got. Like, this was going to be a tough one to remake. Mm-hmm. And in no means do I think we did it better, but I think we did something that would probably make more money.
Yeah.
It would. I think we've fixed the things that drove audiences away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Did they need fixing? As of my most recent viewing, I would say no, it didn't need fixing.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where I was really conflicted by because it wasn't like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest good, and where we made the mistake of trying to make a really great movie. And
There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I didn't think it was terrible. This movie was, like, unredeemable either.
Yeah.
Well, we would never picked it, but, you know, there was a lot in here. I'm like, well, there's a lot of good stuff in here. Like,
I think we strengthened it in that a lot of stuff that was shunted to the side that shouldn't have been shunted to the side.
This avoidance of being romanticized, ultimately, I think, really did hurt the film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the lack of a few established relationships, which would have definitely helped this film.
Yeah, and you don't have to do it gritty the second time because it exists.
Yeah.
It's here.
And this is one of those movies that had the ending that most audiences would be really upset with because it's not the ending you're hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the way it's filmed, they set you up to hope for that Martin and Agnes relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? And
ultimately, it shouldn't have happened anyway. But
yeah. Really, yeah.
Yeah. Right?
I could see Agnes falling in love with Martin, and Martin certainly responding to that. But I think that we fixed that by having her say, "Well, I'm in love with you," and he's like, "Well, you're a bad thing for me because I make bad decisions because of you." So I think you fixed that really well.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think ours is ultimately going to be
any more satisfying.
We're still going to unsatisfy some people, but I feel we've done it with a lot of integrity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to hope so. I'd like to hope so. All right. Well, that kind of brings this episode to a close, but I do want to tell you guys about all the horror. We're all about all the horror all the time, but we can't always cover horror on this show, but we got all the horror coming up in October. All our episodes are going to be horror-based, but all the horror is now this horror convention for your ears, thanks to Sam and some other people who've put this together. And there is how many podcasts involved this year?
28
wow. So far, and a lot of content is going to be dropping in October. Hopefully a brand new podcast episode every day of October, and you could find out which shows are dropping and when by following @AllTheHorror18 on Twitter and watching the hashtag AllTheHorror.
And start watching now because there's some fun stuff already happening.
Yeah, there's the classic movie battle that's happening now.
The villain versus villain battle that Drew from Real Feels put a lot of time and effort into putting together for us. Thank you for that, Drew.
Yeah, I've been voting.
Awesome.
And it's going to be midstream by the time you hear this, but if you want to get on the action, make sure you follow @AllTheHorror18. And of course, we will be part of All the Horror in October and have lots of special guests on our episodes, at least our remake episodes. And we're also going to be watching a horror movie a day for our 31 Days of Horror special that drops in November. Oh my God, we're going to be exhausted.
So if you want to follow along with that, find out what we're watching.
Yeah, and you can follow our individual Twitter feeds, because we usually don't put it on our main feed of what we're watching at the time.
No, because we want it to be a bit of a surprise when you listen to the episode, but if you're really interested.
Yeah. If you really want a prelude to what that episode's going to be, you can follow me. I'm @JBishop616.
And I'm @StepSamS.
I haven't been on so long, I don't remember my password.
You don't have to give out your password. You just have to give out your name.
I know, but
you're @LittleTrishy.
I know, but I have to get in there to put stuff in.
If she does it at all, she's @LittleTrishy.
I'm @LittleTrishy.
But
I'm
Sam
trying.
And I usually will drop what we're watching, although there's one I plan on not telling you about when it happens, because I want it to be a surprise even to Sam and Trish.
Ooh.
They won't see it coming.
Well, now I'm intrigued. Yeah. Well, I was intrigued before, but I'm more intrigued now.
Bad segue. You can help out the show by telling your friends about the show and leaving us a 5-star rating and a short review on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider. Please tell your friends where to find us. We are at a ton of different places. You can find that a list on our link tree on all our social media, which is @InvasionRemake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com. And of course, tell everybody where you can find the episodes: Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, Radio Public, and even
freaking YouTube.
So get on it. Help get everybody's
earballs
on the show.
If you can't find us, you are actively ignoring us. That's pretty much it.
And you can't be ignoring us because you're listening to the diatribe right now.
True.
Okay. That was, I've given all my flesh and blood to this episode.
Yes. It was a tough one.
This was a tough one. I was really like, oh boy, I don't know how this one's going to come together. But I think we did a good job.
Yeah. I miss Rutger Hauer.
Yeah. We came up with something that brings something new to what was there.
Yeah.
Whether it's better or not, that's to be seen.
Yeah.
Well, No, it's not, because it's never going to get made. But
yeah. Well, and hop on our social media. Tell us what your favorite Rutger Hauer movies are. Yes. We've got more in the tank that we would like to cover down the road. But that's going to be it for our Rutger Hauer stuff for a little while. And it was our little way of saying thank you and goodbye. Mm-hmm. But we've got lots more remembering to do.
Yes.
We miss you, Rutger.
We miss you, Rutger.
We do miss you lots.
Isn't that next week our fourth anniversary episode?
Is it?
I think it is.
Ooh.
Is it?
Oh, my God. Yeah, fourth anniversary.
So episode 200 and then our fourth anniversary episode.
Yes.
And we have something kind of planned, I think.
Kind of, sort of. But you'll have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. Next week is our fourth anniversary. I've been Jason.
I am always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary to us.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, I'm not singing.
We are out of here.
Survived. He's been spared to warn us. Pardon?
Yes, yes, it's a sign. Direct from heaven.
Dear God, another sign. Everything is a sign. Me dying like a rat will be a sign.
Kaz, we've got to get out. We've got to move.
No. Martin says nothing can happen to us.
Right!
What do we do now?
All we have to do...
the meat.